The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This week's episode is brought to you by Patreon at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. Not only do you get access to every episode a week early and ad-free, but we have tons of extras, including our two newest interviews. We chat with Mike Scully about his time executive producing the show.
I ran it through seasons 9 through 12, which I always characterize as the four most consecutive seasons of the show.
And we talk with writer Mimi Pond about what it was like to write the first episode of The Simpsons.
You know, and I get to be the turd in the punch bowl every single time I tell this story because nobody wants to hear anything bad about The Simpsons.
You can find all that and more exclusively on patreon.com/talkingsimpsons.
I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy hoy everybody, welcome to Talking Simpsons, where nobody ever suspects the butterfly. I'm your host, Bob Dr. Cheeks Mackey, and this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
Henry Gilbert, good mole man to you.
Who else?
Tanya Harding, sex tape, Chris Antista.
Oh boy, real life events are happening, and today's episode is Around Springfield.
Starland Vocal Band, they suck!
And today's episode aired on April 30th, 1995. And as always, Chris will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real world history.
Jazz hands, Bobby, because LucasArts is revving up full throttle. Jacques Chirac is elected president of France. And since you don't have a job and you don't have shit to do, why not watch Ice Cube and Chris Tucker in Friday?
This will interest no one, but Full Throttle was their first CD-ROM only game, so suck it, floppy disks.
Damn, left behind those disks.
Yes. This is how old 95 was. They used to have talkie versions of their computer games in which you would buy the CD version just for voices, the entire game could be conceivably put on floppy disks.
I know people with DVD sets know the pain, but like when you have 7 floppy disks that are part of your full game and one goes away, you just can't play that thing anymore.
Yeah. It's just over.
It's the worst.
That's why you got to copy those floppies. Don't listen to
copy
that rap
that
guy.
Oh.
Friday was... I didn't see Friday until it started airing on cable. I did not see it in the theaters.
It's an excellent film on the strength of, I love saying his name, DJ Pooh's script. Got to go on to write Grand Theft Auto San Andreas.
I like when you watch those movies and you see the... soon to be famous comedians who have bit parts in it, like Bernie Mac in it.
Almost everybody. Yeah. Debo, Tiny Lister, John Witherspoon.
Well, Tiny Lister I already knew from his run as Zeus in the WWF.
Who can forget?
Give it.
But weren't there several next Friday?
Three Fridays.
There's been many.
There's a
Fridays.
Friday trilogy, an animated series.
Wow, an animated series.
So I think Chris Tucker didn't come back for any of them, did he?
Nope, not at all. I think they're talking about a reboot where he does come back because, hey, what's he got going on now?
Yeah, he's more open to it. For the longest time, the only things he appeared in were Rush Hour films and... Michael Jackson lost.
I heard the problem was they couldn't understand the words that were coming out of his mouth.
Ah, good one.
Yes. So today's episode is Round Springfield. It was written by the critic team, just like A Star Is Burned.
I didn't know that, but then like I did while watching it. Like this is totally one of the critic episodes.
I mean, yes, there's a lot of topical stuff that probably wouldn't be on The Simpsons in this specific of a joke.
It seems like someone had to say, look... it's a very critic joke. You have to change these people's names. They cannot just be on the show.
It can't just be Alan Dershowitz.
Yes.
Like, yeah. You have to change it slightly.
Well, that I don't think, like, we've rewatched the whole show together. I wouldn't think to revisit Bleeding Gums Murphy.
Absolutely not. Well, Bleeding Gums Murphy is an important character to Al Jean and Mike Reese because their first episode, I believe, was Moaning Lisa that they wrote, and
Bleeding Gums Murphy is the magical black man in that episode who solves her problems. But he's funny, and he's played by Ron Taylor, but we haven't seen him for over 100 episodes. Mm-hmm. So the second he shows up here in a hospital gown, I'm like, even then I knew, oh, he's dying.
You knew right
as
away.
As a kid.
Yeah, I got hit real hard. Did not know.
I mean, he made a few appearances. He sung the national anthem in Dancing Homer.
Oh, that's
can
true.
You,
yes.
Can you he's a background character a bunch, but yeah. Like, he hadn't talked in a while.
And he was actually on the talent show judge panel with skincare consultant
oh,
Rowena.
Yeah, that's yeah, true. Yeah. He laughed at the refried dog poop.
But after season three, he was gone. But no one really talked about him. Not...
Though this episode, too, is a real death parade. I'm going to play the death jingle now, yeah. Folks.
Death stalks you at every turn! Ah, there it is! Death!
In the commentary recorded 12 years ago for this episode, Mike Reese calls it a real bloodbath.
Yes. Well, so you've got Ron Taylor, the actor who played Bleeding Gums Murphy. He
dead.
Died in 2002. You've got Steve Allen, who dead. Died not long after that as well. Mm-hmm. And you've also got Phil Hartman.
Uh-huh.
And now Marsha Wallace as well.
And Doris Crowell.
And Doris Crowell.
So five dead people.
I think... Krusty Gets Canceled now has more dead people in it, just thanks to it had more guest stars.
That's almost unfair.
This is also the home to the clip for the death jingle.
Indeed.
But this also...
I forgot how much I edited it. That's not a straight take.
No, yeah. It hit me, too, when I was getting like, oh, man, Chris edited it down. This episode also, though... is another first for The Simpsons, which I didn't know until doing research, actually for The Critic, because the two writers of the teleplay mm-hmm. were writers for The Critic, and that is the writing team of Joshua Sternin and then Jeffrey Ventimiglia. Mm-hmm. Now, Jennifer Ventimiglia. Mm-hmm. So the co-writer is, I believe, the first trans writer of a wow. Simpsons episode, and Jennifer Ventimiglia... transitioned sometimes in the 2010s. I'm not sure exactly. She and Joshua were in the news a couple years ago because they had sold a script to be produced by Dan Savage of Savage Love Column fame to make an autobiographical show about two Hollywood writers and one transitions and what that was like for them. And
well, but you might have an opening if Jeffrey Tambor's kicked off his show.
That's true.
Yeah, they're still writing partners, and I believe they were. They said they were 27 when they wrote this episode.
Wow,
so super young writers.
Oh, it's never going to happen for me, is it?
Nope. We passed the line, Chris.
All right.
Jennifer pre-transition is on the commentary. Mm-hmm. Yes, and though I like that this commentary that they are very open that this was total awards bait.
Yeah.
They wanted to make an awards bait episode. They thought, if we kill off a character and have maudlin emotions in it, it'll surely win an award. That's why very rarely do Simpsons have teleplay credits.
Yeah, they look odd.
But this one, Al Jean and Mike Reese were like, we want the awards. When the awards come for this, then we need to get the awards. So they have to get story by credit and gave teleplay to Ventimiglia and Sternin.
And as we talked about before, the credited writer is not always the person who came up with the idea for the episode.
Rarely
but they're,
so.
They're never listed as story by.
Credits.
So yeah, that's pure Emmy bait.
Call that the Spielberg credit.
Though also,
I said two sentences to two people and they wrote the thing.
Though I had heard that Aaron Sorkin was one of the few who made sure he was on those titles, though that it was implied that he did that to get more money for his coke addiction.
Yeah, I thought he rewrote every script on a cocaine bender or something.
Mm-hmm. He's credited to teleplay for most of his stuff. Yeah.
No, I mean, that's the deal, too. Like, Matthew Weiner rewrote pretty much every episode of Mad Men. Like, Dan Harmon rewrote every episode of Community. But it's just the system of doing it. Like, as showrunner, you still let people have credits so as the writer so they can move up in the world just like you got to do before you were a showrunner.
Yeah, but I've rarely had this luxury. But it's really easy to add good jokes when the structure and the places and the things and the timing are already there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just rewatching an episode of Community and like, that's a brilliant thing. I don't think I'd have the energy to write if I had this whole scene was my responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
But I just heard Dan Harmon talk about the same thing for Rick and Morty.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he always puts a final stink on every
He calls it harmonizing.
Harmonizing.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So more Emmy stuff. We know now that Lisa's Wedding one was submitted and won. Good. This was not even submitted, so yeah. they clearly didn't have faith in this episode winning, and they were right. I mean, we'll get into it later, but I feel like the pathos they want to earn in this episode just feels flat and cheap, and it comes out of nowhere. Like, they don't really build to it. It's never really earned, in my opinion.
I didn't feel it was earned either. It felt kind of cheap, and like a very special episode, which I felt is beneath The Simpsons, honestly. Yeah.
And like, I like Lisa episodes. This is just a not very good one.
Mm-hmm. And I'd also say that I wonder if it was somewhat political, because the people, I would assume the people who submit what episode you're going to do for the Emmys would be David Merkin and the regular staff of Six, not the pinch hitting staff of The Critic. So why would they submit an episode they didn't write? They would go with one of theirs. And also, they were just smarter to go with, I would have submitted Lisa's Substitute over Round Springfield.
Lisa's Wedding?
Lisa's Wedding. Yeah. It's a better
Either way.
Episode.
They could resubmit Lisa's Substitute. Win again.
They could do that too.
Yes. But the first joke in this episode feels more 2017 than 1995.
Hell yeah.
Hey kids, it's story time! I'm gonna tell you the story of Krusty's expensive new suit. His sexual harassment suit! Anyway, as part of Krusty's plea bargain, he has a new court-ordered sidekick, Ms. No Means No! Whoa, you're hot! Let's get some dinner after the show. I have dinner with all my employees. Right, Sideshow Mel?
We've never spoken outside of work.
I'm surprised he didn't try to blame his problems on his Percodan addiction.
Wasn't my fault. It was a Percodan. If you ask me, that stuff rots your brain. And I'll wait for my new sponsor. Percodan! Ah, crap!
I don't know why Percodan was sponsoring the Krusty the Clown show.
I like to think that on his Percodan bender, he signed up for that. Forgot about it.
Yeah, and actually we saw a similar joke in The Critic with the James Bond parody, Mr. No Means No.
That's true. It's the same joke from the same season.
I just wanted to add an addendum here. As I would say, the foremost recreational drug user, Percodan doesn't exist. Anymore, Percocet is what it was replaced with.
After all the deaths. I don't know.
Which is
It's still oxycodone. It's still responsible for many deaths.
There's tons of people addicted to it, though. I feel like the Percodan thing is specifically a reference to Jerry Lewis. He was addicted to Percodan, and he actually came out later so he injured his back terribly in 1965 doing just a pratfall
or something on a piano.
He did a pratfall off a piano at a Vegas show, which he did a million times. But he said somebody put a steel cable in the wrong spot and he broke his back on it. And so he was just on painkillers for over a decade. He said in 1973 he was suicidal from it, and I had the gun in my mouth and then I heard my kids laughing and I put it away. And then he finally got off the Percodan. So I think many other people were on Percodan, like Elvis was on Percodan as well. And I think it's Jerry Lewis.
I think Jerry Lewis eventually had a thing installed in his body that would just pump painkillers into himself.
Allegedly,
I watched a video of him like holding up his thing. He's like, I press this button and it gives me more good feeling.
Well, he invented it for me. I love his serious voice. It's so good.
Invented it for me.
Krusty
got to keep his job after his sexual harassment suit, which, as we saw with Matt Lauer and Charlie Rose, that you get immediately fired that morning,
and then the women
women who work with you have to go on TV and like, this was a surprise. That, by the way, folks, if you listened to an episode recently where we talked for 5 minutes about the Today Show and didn't mention Matt Lauer, it's because we recorded it before that came out. And honestly, like, we're recording this a little earlier, too. So if more sexual harassment things came out after, like, sorry.
If you're a clown, just stay inside. Stay inside.
Maybe this is why Miss Penny Candy is no longer on the show.
I thought
the only female employee, except for Tina Ballerina.
It was more, like, for instance, Sam Kinison setting the... not Sam Kinison. Bobcat Goldthwait setting the Tonight Show on fire. That you would have to do an on-air apology if you did something vaguely criminal at this point. Nobody lost their job. Nobody went to court. They just did something like that. They did, some kind of public service,
but
on camera.
Yeah, on camera.
That happened a lot.
Or you'd have to do one of those anti-drunk driving commercials after, like, you're the actor who played AJ Soprano and got caught drunk driving.
Yeah.
Which I miss those days of just like, could you guys just do drugs?
And that was our worst problem in the world.
People. Yes. And I also, that's still what the cover is today of just like, I ask all my employees out to dinner, like, which is a total lie. You're only doing it to the women.
I invite all my employees to watch you masturbate, men and women.
They're all welcome. So geographically, it doesn't make much sense that they're watching TV in the kitchen, but you just have to do that for the joke.
It's the one free TV they can move around.
Yeah, and I also think, by the way, if you don't know who George Washington Carver is, he's the peanut guy. Though he also was a bit of an environmentalist, which kind of gets overlooked among all the peanut stuff. It was
scientists. Most scientists are.
Yeah.
Specifically, what did he do with peanuts again?
Well, his thing was that he saw that cotton sucked up the environment. You needed better crops for it, even though cotton made you the most money. And so he's trying to teach farmers, like, no, plant peanuts and sweet potatoes. They're better for your land. And here's all these things you can make with that food. Just do that instead of cotton.
Yeah, I think in my extremely white school during Black History Month, we spent about 5 minutes on this stuff. So
yeah, he was a number one you'd hear about in Black History Month in the 90s. I thought that Jagged Metal Crustio is like a lame plot device.
I don't know if the joke is that they're not trying or
Is it a prize in the box and then it comes out of its plastic? Or
It was a joke I really loved at the time, but it doesn't, I don't know. It doesn't hold up the same as
the
other jokes in the season.
Watching it again, I'm like, Bart is so lucky he didn't chew his cereal because, my God.
Yes, yeah. Well, and I'd also say, he should just have internal bleeding and be immediately coughing up blood.
Yes.
It should not give him appendicitis.
In fact, there's no reason
it should go to his appendix.
They consulted Mike Reiss's father, a doctor, and he said, no, that cannot happen, but they went and did it anyways.
And I bet he got paid anyway. Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, that's right. He probably gave his dad a fat consultancy.
I want to think this is partially based on a real food poisoning scare from a few years ago in real history. The 1993 Jack in the Box E. coli scare, which is actually the most infamous food poison outbreak in contemporary history.
Yeah, it's when I came into California, I was shocked. Like, this company still exists. I hear the name, this is all I think of is that it killed people.
Yeah, I mean, another chain that was in my area, Chi-Chi's, the Mexican restaurant, their salsa gave people E. coli. They're gone. They're gone forever. Yeah.
It's amazing Jack in the Box bounced
back.
I remember their first ads on cable, in the late 90s of, guys, we're back. Look, we're getting better. It's okay. They want to pretend it was all in the past.
Yeah, and I lived in Ohio, and Jack in the Box was just a punchline to me until I moved out here and saw them. But yeah, 732 people were infected from beef patties.
Wow.
Four children died, and 178 people were left with permanent injuries. And the most hilarious thing about this, all of these infections came from the Monster Burger.
Oh, God.
And the tagline was, so good, it's scary.
Oh,
so
God.
It really, the Monster Burger killed people.
No. That's unbelievable it could survive.
Four children died.
Babies. If one child died from any food here, you feel like that'd be the end of that
company. They were in our town, and they disappeared. I remember them disappearing when this happened. They never came back.
And I think ultimately it was found to be the fault of Jack in the Box. They tried to blame their distributor, but ultimately they did not cook the burgers hot enough. There was such a demand for these burgers, they wanted to get them out as soon as possible to the customers.
God.
So they learned a valuable lesson. Cook your meat, goddammit.
Yes, yeah. So Bart also is learning a valuable lesson from Homer when he's trying to get people to believe him that he's sick.
I hate this joke.
Bart, said you were going to study.
Oh, my stomach.
You just don't want to take that test.
Oh, I mean it. It really hurts.
Mom, I think he's serious.
Kids are so naive. Lisa, when you get to be our age, you'll learn a few things. Like when a sign says, do not feed the bears. Man, you'd better not feed the bears. Now get to school, boy.
I don't like that do not feed the bears joke.
I like how badly the bear is drawn.
It looks like a toy, and I think the one thing that's missing is the bear should be growling or making a noise. It just is like so weird.
It was more
off
of the magic reality of the critic as well. Of just in the critic, a giant blue whale can drop on a Jay and nobody thinks about it. But in The Simpsons at this point, Homer just lifting his arm up in a non-Halloween episode to be like, oh, a bear's been on my arm this entire time.
Entire
it has
scene.
Been for days.
And
apparently.
It's not drawn well. I feel like they should have retaken that scene or something.
I'd also say, for redundancy's sake, that they They have two jokes about Homer's left arm having something he doesn't recognize.
Like, that's right.
It also has a tattoo on it. So they do a Homer's weird left arm joke twice. Like, I also don't love the joke of, like, the charter says that Bart can die, which is like, shouldn't that be in, like, the teachers' union rules or something?
I think it was updated over time.
Yeah, and then also just the snake ate Milhouse. I do like the return of the snake joke, but just like the snake ate Milhouse, the joke.
We do see Lunch Lady Doris in the nurse's office again because of budget cuts, but in the episode Whacking Day, we find out she gets two paychecks that way, so she's played nurse before.
Yeah, and then we also get a very important line that that would only be a big deal until in 2004.
Yes.
Lunch Lady Doris? Why are you here?
Budget cuts. They've even got groundskeeper Willie teaching French.
Bonjour, you cheese-eating surrender monkeys.
Look, my stomach really hurts.
All I can give you are these chewable Prozac for kids. Your choice. Manic depressive mouse or the bluebird of unhappiness.
Superintendent Chalmers, I'd like you to meet our new school nurse, Lunch Lady Doris.
Yeah, nice to see you. Seymour, why is that student lying unconscious on the floor?
Well, in many cases, the floor is the best. Oh, look, here comes Lumpy, the school snake. Oh, Lord.
It was nice to see Chalmers briefly, at least.
This is one of the few terms on The Simpsons that has its own wiki.
Yeah, it's cheese eating surrender monkeys.
I've never seen a joke because it should be totally funny and fine, but I've never seen a joke more stolen with that without attribution than this joke.
Yeah, it was co-opted in a bad way.
Yeah, co-opted with nefarious purposes behind it. You're not supposed to agree with Willie. Like, yes, Willie is the correct character who I agree with.
The joke is that Willie is being an obnoxious Scotsman who hates the French, which is a thing for members of the United Kingdom that they hate the French. That's the joke.
Yeah,
you're not supposed to agree with Willie. But
wasn't that like a New York Post cover or something? They used cheese eating surrender monkeys in like a major headline
in newspapers. It's attributed to cantankerous TV show hosts like Jeremy Clarkson and what's his name, Anthony Bourdain, have all used it with like no attribution whatsoever, that we're all just saying a Simpsons quote.
Yeah, well, and they mentioned on the commentary that they're like, Janine Garofalo is complaining about the use of that term because it seemed too insulting, and it all was because the French dared to not help us invade a sovereign nation under illegal means. How dare those assholes not want to help kill people in Iraq?
The good thing is, in the end, we were right. So.
Exactly. We were proven right. Those WMDs showed up. There was no proof that it was all just lies.
Nope.
Look, I'm not saying France does everything right, but they were right not to go.
Cheese is delicious.
If you actually have a political argument with someone leaning right, they would appreciate if you forgot about all that.
Yes, you're supposed to pretend that
please,
didn't happen.
Just forget it happened.
It was just spreading democracy, and let's stop thinking about it.
Yeah, it's that easy. Just sow the seeds and walk away.
Yeah, we sowed the seeds of democracy. It certainly didn't cause the rise of ISIS or anything like that. But anyway, yeah, I remember you kids, if you're younger than us, maybe don't remember what it was like in the mid-2000s. Like, fuck France was how everybody felt. Like, I remember
Freedom Fries and what the Congress
cafeteria called them Freedom Fries. I also remember I worked at a Blockbuster Video and in Florida with some conservative people, but I tried to never talk politics with them, unlike now, which I would have been complaining all the time. But anyway, there was a guy there who, like, oh, we both love Star Wars, that's cool. And then I mentioned, like, the first Pirates movie was out, which is before we knew who Johnny Depp was. So I was just excited for it. And I said, let's see the new Pirates. Have you guys seen the new Pirates movie? And then he said, no, I'm not seeing that because Johnny Depp's a France lover. I was like,
that's
why you're not seeing this fucking movie.
Is that because
movie.
He lived in France or something?
Yeah, he had lived in
How
France.
How dare he?
I did not see it to that degree.
Also, that Prozac for kids gag, like, it's cute and all, but it makes no sense. Like, it's just, they just had a funny name for Prozac for kids.
It also feels like a very critic joke.
And also what felt like a very critic joke was hearing the ER theme when we see Hibbert.
Yes.
Like,
the joke.
And they just
the hospital.
And they just throw in Dr. Nick there for a gag, even though he should not be working with Hibbert.
I feel like a lot of this is Al Jean and Mike Reese sort of revisiting their greatest hits of the seasons they worked on. Like, that's why Chalmers is there, Lunch Lady Doris, Riviera, Hibbert. Like, a lot of the beats we've seen them right before, they're sort of returning to, and that's distracting from the main story, I think.
Yeah, but they're easy softballs they can count on.
Man, these are primo seats. I could really go for a hot dog.
Homer, this is an operation.
Hot dogs! Get your hot dogs here! Woohoo!
Okay, Bart, I will count to three, and you will be sound asleep. One, two, three. Out like a light.
Scalper.
Ah! Oopsie. Maybe if I fiddle with these knobs. Hey, I smell gas. Pleasant gas. Oh, night, night gas.
Dr. Nick is like a surgeon for hire. I don't know what he's doing working with Dr.
With Hibbert.
Yeah.
And also, though, that gas being loose should have knocked out Hibbert, too. That it only affects Nick is just like, it makes a joke even cheaper, I think.
He doesn't breathe out of the mask? I forgot.
I don't know. It's okay. Just that he's fiddling with the knobs, and so it's just loose at the top.
That'd be a lot of gas in that room, then.
Though it is a real nightmare scenario for me, thinking of like waking up during a surgery and seeing them cutting into you, like, ugh, it's terrifying to me. Then I swear this scene of Bart showing off his scar and his appendicitis is straight from the French children's books Madeline.
Yeah, really. You see the animated adaptation, she sings a song about it.
My scar.
I'm so glad someone else remembers it. I'm getting goosebumps. It's so vague.
I'm not the Madeline super fan. You guys are.
It
apparently.
Was like straight to HBO, and I remember bringing the tape home to try and convince my parents to subscribe to HBO because the book I loved, my sister and I loved, was now animated, and we watched it over and over again, a friend's tape of Madeline.
They had to add a ton of songs because it's a 20-page children's book.
So there's a whimsical song about a scar.
Yeah, his appendix sticking out.
Interesting.
So,
it's a French child who lives in a convent, and a nun takes care of them in an orphanage, and she gets appendicitis one day, and then to show how brave she is, she's like showing off her scar, just as Bart does.
She's Madeline.
Wicked! I got this cool scar, and I get to miss a week of school.
Dr. Hibbert, can I have my appendix out?
Why not? Follow me, kids. Nurse, prep these children.
I'm glad you're okay, Bart. Mwah. Bleeding Gums Murphy!
Little Lisa. It's good to see you again.
It's been a long time.
And then we get an actual flashback in the show.
Man,
the
is that jarring.
Season one. In season six, even seeing season one animation, it's, like, woo, boy.
I do want to step back a tiny bit to a joke that just really fell flat for me. And when it ended, I'm like, where was the joke? Where Bart comes to after his surgery, and he blames Homer for the accident. And Homer begins strangling him, and then Hibbert comes in and says, "Now he just had surgery to stop strangling him," and Homer does, and it's over. The scene just ends. I'm like, that could have been a joke. Like,
I guess the joke is he shouldn't be strangling someone who just had surgery. But
it just was so flat to me, flat and awkward.
Yeah, though I really love the delivery of "Nurse, prep these children."
They must all be insured.
That they just all are immediately removing it, and so that's the entrance of Bleeding Gums Murphy. And again, it's what makes this episode really weak to me is like
he can't leave the room.
The show Simpsons, especially in season six, undercuts so many sitcom cliches. But this is the exact sitcom cliche of like, oh, you're a character I haven't seen in a while. You're in a hospital bed the whole time. You'll even have a telltale cough. Like, it's just so maudlin and treacly. Yeah. I just don't like it. Like, and the closest they get to jokes with, well, first you get a joke that apparently Bleeding Gums' brother is Hibbert, which...
So, Hibbert has two long-lost brothers in this show. The other one was the doctor in Shelbyville when Homer is looking for Herb Powell.
Just right at that moment, I'm like, that's the kind of joke someone writes when they know they're not coming back tomorrow.
You just
let this open thread forever.
I did like Bart's Dr. Cheeks joke, just that they fit in as many ways to talk about his butt as possible. Yeah. Doing the rounds, and I'm a little behind.
He bounced back.
Also, in case you don't know, Ron Taylor became famous on Broadway for originating the role of Audrey II in the 1981 Little Shop of Horrors.
Really?
Yeah. He obviously was recast in the film.
He's got an awesome voice.
Yeah, for real.
He's great. And then we get the history of Bleeding Gums, which again, if you need a more, as a viewer of the for the first time, if you need a more indication that he is dying, it's him telling his life story. It's like, oh, here's my life story. I'll be dead soon. Like, that's exactly... They did that exact fucking thing on the Netflix Luke Cage show when his barbershop dad figures like, now it's time to tell you my life story. I was a drug dealer and knew this guy.
All these kids got guns, but they ain't got fathers. That's like almost a verbatim line from that awful scene.
And then he's dead in 10 minutes later.
I mean, there's a lot of great jokes in Bleeding Gums' backstory, but ultimately, every part of his life is too ridiculous to get you invested in him as a real person who will die and then care about his death. It's just too silly, I think.
Yeah. So here's part one of his history.
I learned at the feet of Blind Willie Witherspoon.
I've been playing jazz for 30 years, and I just can't make a go of it. I want you to have my saxophone.
This isn't a saxophone. It's an umbrella.
So I've been playing an umbrella for 30 years? Why didn't anybody tell me?
We all thought it was funny.
That's not funny.
Then I got my big break. I was on Steve Allen's Tonight Show.
Now, a brilliant jazz musician who's inspired me to do some improv poetry. Twinkle, twinkle, groovy cat, how I wonder where you at. I really love the way you cook, just like me when I wrote this book, How to Make Love to Steve Allen. From the author of Happiness is a Naked Steve Allen, Journey to the Center of Steve Allen, and The Joy of Cooking Steve Allen.
That should be in black and white, though, if it's from the Allen Tonight Show.
But that is Steve Allen, and he was on the show previously voicing the altered voice of Bart Simpson.
And he was the Blue Dot.
Yes, separate vocations.
Yeah, though, and he had...
Did anybody else go down the Steve Allen rabbit hole again?
Well, I already did this on The Critic, though, because they did this exact same joke in Critic Season 1 about him saying he wrote a book while writing a song. It's like, while writing the song for you, Marty, I wrote this book about Steve Allen's advice to Marty.
There were a ton of Steve Allen has done everything jokes, and there's a sketch on MST3K where they invent the Steve-o-meter that will tell you if Steve Allen has already invented something that you have. And Steve Allen did invent the Steve-o-meter, so you can't even invent that.
It was one of those things I just went down this rabbit hole of, because I think, was that because Steve Allen had laid claim, he personally claimed he invented all this stuff? But I think it's...
He was just so prolific, I think.
He has technically touched all, like, so many genres in every medium, and he's written a billion books on all of it. I even disappeared into, like, it's Steve Allen teaching you how to use computers. He was on the forefront of that. He's the first host of The Tonight Show. There's someone else credited with creating The Tonight Show. He's like, you see that other show he created? Like, this is Steve Allen's show.
And he did the Man on the Street bits first.
He created that. Yeah. It was originally called the Knickerbocker Hour or something. The Knickerbocker Beer.
I'm glad they changed that. Yeah. But this is between 1954 and 1957, this appearance.
And he only got busted out of the show because, like, you're doing a great job. He wants you to do the same job on another show. So they moved him to another program in hopes to elevate it. He didn't quit.
Oh, wow.
And he wasn't fired.
And then Jack Parr was next, right?
Jack Parr was brought in.
Johnny Carson.
And for 30, everyone did 3 to 4 years until Johnny Carson. Yeah, Steve Allen knocked her up, but Johnny Carson married her. And I just because I watched John Mulaney and his salute to David Letterman, I have a dumb bit from his stand-up about Steve Allen that made me laugh, and I couldn't help but think of.
Oh, let's hear it.
The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, I think it said to people, hey, take a break from your weird life and watch these fancy people make show business. But David Letterman's shows said to people, your weird life is just as funny as show business. And he showcased weirdos, and he showcased outsiders that nobody on TV ever had before. Yeah, Steve Allen did some of that stuff. But if Steve Allen is so great, how come he's dead?
He has a point.
It's the best joke at Steve Allen's expense I've heard in at least 20 years.
He's been dead since 2000.
That's so great. Yeah, Steve Allen did some of that stuff. But fuck, that was so funny.
Well, I love that John Mulaney cares that much about old-timey entertainment, because Steve Allen is, and thanks to The Simpsons, will forever remain a part of that for people give a shit.
We also find out about his Fabergé egg habit, which in actuality, like, it's not tens of thousands of dollars for original Fabergé eggs. It's tens of millions of dollars.
They're kind of priceless. I did the research on this. There are believed to have been 69 created. Nice.
Dude!
50 are on record, and we currently know where 43 of them are. And the wiki page has where all of them are located.
Wow.
Yes. They're that precious and rare.
Mark them on a map.
And then we get a very not-aged-well scene.
I cut my first and only album, Sax on the Beach. But then I spent all my money on my $1,500 a day habit. I'd like another Fabergé egg, please.
Sir, don't you think you've had enough?
I tell you when I've had enough.
When was the last time you worked?
In 86, when I did a guest shot on The Cosby Show.
Hey, kids, meet Grandpa Murphy.
We have three grandpas already.
This one's a great jazz musician.
Oh, they all are.
You see, the kids, they listen to the rap music, which gives them the brain damage. With their hippin' and the hoppin' and the bippin' and the boppin', so they don't know what the jazz is all about. You see, jazz is like Jell-O pudding pop. No, actually, it's more like Kodak film. No, actually, jazz is like the new Coke. It'll be around forever.
Wow.
Now, the Cosby Show's been rightfully taken off the air for years now, but if you've watched a ton of it like me, mm-hmm. I've probably seen it all front to back like three or four times. They're just always in reruns. You would know that this happened on the show. Mm-hmm. Cosby would often go into these like improv sessions just by himself, and everyone just had to sit there in the background yeah. until he was done.
It's great animation on everybody awkwardly just like, do we say anything?
Yeah.
Are we just silent and until
great,
it stops?
It's a great joke about the parade of
yes.
poorly
yes.
reasoned guest stars on the Cosby Show.
Yeah, it was very indulgent in a good way that he gave these, like, it was him exposing black culture to yeah, America yeah. that didn't really get to be on TV.
But they always had to bring them in the house instead of bringing the kids to wherever that person yes. was. So they were usually sometimes a family member. And it's also The Simpsons still has a playful but not spiteful rivalry with the Cosby Show at this point.
Well,
so
it's been dead for 3 years now at this point.
Oh, the show's over.
Yeah,
that's right.
92 yeah. it ended. But yeah, I have clips of Cosby's time as a genial pitchman. Now he's known as a serial rapist, but in yep. the past, he sold many a product, and so here are all of them. Here's Jell-O pudding.
You ask kids why their beds aren't made, and they say, I forgot. You ask them why they're walking with muddy sneakers through the living room, and they say, oh, I forgot. But these same kids will ask you, Dad, how come you didn't fix any Jell-O pudding tonight? You said you would 2 years ago, August 12th, at 7:31 p.m. You had red sweater on and some loafers brown. And you say, I forgot. And they say, Dad, you're grounded. Jell-O pudding.
What?
I can't be a kid without it.
Just let Bill Cosby go.
Man, yeah. I could just take that commercial and put any product I want at the end of it.
So I think he represented all of these products for like a decade at least.
Yeah.
So here he is talking about Kodak's color watch system with his dog.
Bill Cosby on Great Film Developing.
This is my dog. We lost Best of Show at a big dog show. That was a sad night. He was very upset. I took some pictures, remember? Huh? Well, now you don't think I'd take them just anywhere to be developed. Here, come on, look at them.
Ask for the Kodak Color Watch System. This Color Whoa. Watch seal says only Kodak products are used for great developing.
Dude.
He's still upset. I show him the pictures. He says, arf, Color Watch, you're going to thank me for it.
Yeah, Cosby, I bet you've taken some pictures.
Yeah.
I just, the more the total recall on that seal, like when you had your pictures developed,
yeah.
that's the seal that
the
was
Kodak
on.
The Kodak seal
Whoa,
quality.
When those envelopes came back from the vacation you took 2 months ago and you can finally afford to, your parents could afford to develop this.
Finally see those photographs.
The best one is New Coke, which according to the novel Gump and Company, was invented by Forrest Gump.
Wow.
I was wondering where that was going.
Introducing the great new taste of Coca-Cola. The best tasting Coke in the history of ever. It's a hit. It's a
what?
Coke is hit.
Wow.
It's Coca-Cola with a new taste, a new sensation, a new explosion of wonderfulness in your mouth. Go ahead, try it.
It's just how you feel.
Well,
these words.
Yeah. Some fun. Yeah. Unfortunate improv.
Taste.
It's a kick, it's a hit, it's a Coke.
Well,
Coke is it.
I mean, Cosby selling you a drink, also kind of unfortunate in 2017.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, we found him with a high C promote. All right.
Yeah. Drink, come
so,
on.
So
drink
New Coke
it.
Basically was, well, Coke was trying to compete with Pepsi, right? Trying to be innovative or trying
they
to have
be hip.
Yeah.
I don't know this off the top of my head. It's in a bunch of your marketing books of, there's a term for it where they're trying to replace something when no one's asking for that product to be replaced.
Yeah.
And in my, from what I understood, I think they found a way to make Coke and save money.
Interesting.
So they wanted to. It's a new Coke. It's just as good. Pepsi was a little sweeter.
Yeah, it was. That's why I don't like it.
It's disgusting.
I'm a Coke
I can't,
man.
I will swat a Pepsi to the ground at this point.
Is Pepsi okay? No.
But they replaced it. The public went crazy for some reason. And for a long time, I don't remember this. I don't remember what it tastes like. But I remember Coke is it. In like every skating rink and coming out of my TV, that's the slogan for the new Coke.
Yeah,
but Coca-Cola Classic—they didn't put Coke on another bottle for another 30 years?
Just C-O-K-E. It was always Coca-Cola Classic.
Coca-Cola Classic, letting you know this is the old version, the one you liked, not the one Bill Cosby says, well, blow in your mouth and you like the taste whether you're alive or dead.
I know I've had New Coke at some point, and just like Crystal Pepsi, I wish they'd re-release it just so we know what disappointment tastes like.
I wonder if at the Coke Museum you can get New Coke. Huh. They have every other...
I would not be surprised if they slid it into regular Coke and nobody noticed at all.
By the way, I looked over.
I thought Steve Allen did video game commercials. I know I had saw one. I didn't see it, and I'm just telling you now because I think you'll like it. I did find an Atari Don Knotts commercial where he escapes prison with the help of the Game Breaker.
Wow! I recommend Intellivision with George Plimpton.
Oh, really?
That's a smart one.
Television.
By the way, some of the real jazz musicians who were on the Cosby Show included Dizzy Gillespie.
Wow, really?
B.B. King and Lena Horne. Dizzy Gillespie played the music teacher for the then youngest one.
For Rudy.
And B.B.
King puffed his cheeks out a lot, I recall.
And B.B. King played a character who wasn't B.B. King, but looked exactly like him and used the same instrument. But he's like, no, it's your uncle, this guy.
I'm C.C. Prince. Yeah. I play the guitar.
And Stevie Wonder as well was on it, too. Yeah, it's every Bill Cosby joke is weird now. But Gina Reese loved making fun of Bill Cosby.
They used to be rivals.
For one character, I think that's the longest one character has talked on The Simpsons in a long time.
Yeah, for sure.
They just let Dan Castellaneta in a go, which, again, feels like they would never have a direct parody of a person that long on a non-Gene and Reese one.
And I will say, Dan's Cosby is not the best Cosby I've heard, but it's still funny. It's still very funny.
He improvises very well in the voice.
It's the one I stole because it's the most fun to do.
And I do love the animation of him doing like kind of Egyptian arms during Pippin and the Hoppin.
It's hard to make him mug as much in his Simpsonized form.
Yes. And another thing Gene and Reese love is recycled animation. So they pulled out Kent Brockman from Bart's Comet when he's about to read off the following people are gay just to sub in 20 more seconds of him introducing the Krusty clip, which I do like the Krusty clip of him defending his cereal. Well, I half like it.
I like it.
And I contend that those tourists were decapitated before they entered the Krusty Land House of Knives. Next question.
What about that little boy who got appendicitis from eating your cereal?
To prove that this Metal-O is harmless, I will personally eat one. See, there's nothing. Boy! That thing is shredding my insides!
Krusty, that wasn't the metal one, that was a regular Krusty-O.
It's poison!
So the critic writers did not do their research. Itchy and Scratchy Land exists, but Krusty Land is only in the Simpsons arcade game. Yeah. You're all fired.
And Universal Studios.
Oh, that too. Well, now it's real.
I wish they'd have gotten faster to the real. Like, that was just the regular O, but it's like, speed it up.
There's something clumsy and not funny about it, and it's saved by the loving animation given to Krusty.
It's
not
great.
As elaborate as we've seen before. But
I do like the tag. It's poison.
Yeah. Also that he's selling Tonya Harding's wedding night video, which is a real life sex tape you could buy if you wanted to be horrible.
And
but
now there's a Tonya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan movie. Yeah,
there is as we speak. I Tonya, which I feel like I'll probably like. I love Margot Robbie, but
I love Margot Robbie. Yeah.
Tonya Harding is the unsung celebrity sex tape that no one talks about
because it's too vile. Is it with Jeff Galooly?
Well, I wouldn't want to see Jeff Galooly ever.
It's not. You can't jerk to it. Was I being indelicate? they're not that type of people.
I need to know about the cinema. Photography, Chris. Well, I'm not lowbrow.
Well, I mean, it's like a late 80s. Like I've seen like 1 second of it they show on the news. It's like, boy, this is cheap and it's not.
It's awful. Yeah. They're both not porn types. Body wise.
Yeah, no, they're people you don't want to see have sex.
So Jeff no Galooly. One bought it, but I don't know. Like it's one of the first celebrity sex tapes I can think of. Mm-hmm. Let me know. Maybe Little Richard has one out there.
Rob Lowe. then we get the first of two takes of Jazz Band, which this will take us into break. Actually, let's give a listen.
Lift me, won't you lift me above the old routine? Make it nice, play it clean, Jazzman. When the jazzman's testifying, a faithless man, Billy
Simpsons. We'll be right back.
I may not be the jazz man, but I am testifying that you should sign up for patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. Yes, everybody, I am here again to tell you about the awesome Patreon podcast stuff you are missing out on if you did not sign up for this. Not only do you get every episode a week early and ad-free, but you get tons of cool exclusives, including, if you listened at the beginning of this episode, two of our most recent interviews. One where we talked to Mike Scully for a whole hour, and he was a writer on The Simpsons from season 5 through 8, and then the showrunner for seasons 9 through 12, and he has an amazing career that we only scratch the surface of, but it's tons of fun. Also, we have an interview with Mamie Pond. 28 years ago, the first ever episode of The Simpsons aired, and she wrote it, but you don't hear a lot about her side of things, and as the interview reveals, well, there's a reason for that, and she really explains things that I think both are must-listen interviews for fans of The Simpsons and this podcast, so you should sign up at patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons to check them out. The holidays are still going strong, and if you want a cool gift for yourself, you should get a Talking Simpsons t-shirt. If you just go to shirtsicle.com, that's like popsicle but with shirt, or tiny.cc/talking shirt, you can get your own Talking Simpsons t-shirt. That's a beautiful sky blue with a logo that is in the style of Ion Springfield, a song that's very important to us and designed by the wonderful Nina Matsumoto. It's a great thing to wear while listening to us talk about, say, Talking Critic on the Patreon, which just wrapped up, or our exclusive holiday special where we talk about Futurama. Yes, we actually do a podcast about Futurama in the style of Talking Simpsons, the thing you've always wanted. You can listen to it now at patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons while wearing your Shirtsicle t-shirt.
Hey, this is Hank Azaria. You're listening to Talking Simpsons on Laser Time. I didn't know that was a thing.
Do you like shows like Laser Time, Video Game Apocalypse, and 302010? Then you should know these shows are almost entirely listener-supported through patreon.com/lasertime. For as little as $5 a month, you can make sure all Laser Time shows keep going and get weekly, exclusive, uncensored, and commercial-free bonus show, Bonus Time, in return. Here's a taste.
Fox owns A New Hope in perpetuity.
And now Disney does.
I said to someone, like, do you remember they traded a real sportscaster for Oswald the Rabbit?
Yeah.
To do nothing with him.
He's got a store.
So when someone brought the Fox deal, I'm like, they want that movie.
And
they are gonna buy this company.
Yeah. Disney owns The Simpsons and everything like The Simpsons Fox has made.
Family Guy.
Family Guy, American Dad.
Married with Children.
King of the Hill. They own it all.
It's impossible. And like, the example I was talking with my girlfriend, or maybe I was writing about it online, there's no company that can realistically manage that much shit. Let's look at it like this. Disney owns Fox. The movie series Ice Age.
The movie series
Ice Age is a big fish in a small pond for Fox and Blue Sky Studio. You go to like SeaWorlds and they have Ice Age 4D movies and they're all over the place. Why the fuck would I, as a Disney employee, put any priority over that with Frozen?
Why would Bob Iger ever make an Ice Age anything?
Get your weekly bonus podcast, over 100 movie commentaries, exclusive videos, gameplay days, and more by supporting LaserTime at patreon.com/LaserTime.
That's the original Carole King.
Very appropriate for Lisa to love white jazz.
My girlfriend and I, for some reason, just caught a PBS documentary on Carole King.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
Wrote over like 100 songs for other people.
That's
for
true.
The Monkees, mm-hmm. for down on the board, like up on the rooftop. It's crazy. And the documentary
shows
are like...
She's a national treasure. I love her.
Did you write this? I'm like, oh yeah, here, let me do it for you. I'm like, I'd never heard her perform this song. Didn't know she wrote James Taylor's song, You Got a Friend.
Yeah, yeah.
She wrote all of that shit. She's probably one of the most prolific songwriters the 60s and 70s had. And I hate her version of her own song.
I like
Lisa's
Jazzman
better.
Yeah.
No, Yardley Smith does a great job with Jazzman. Yeah. She's really good. I couldn't believe it.
I know I've heard it before, but I just compared them. Mm-hmm. I prefer Lisa's version.
I never heard it on the... I listen to oldie stations all the time, but
My mom was a big fan.
Well, but the oldie stations I listen to, I realize now, went from like 52 to 69. They never did 70s stuff because in the 90s, they're like, the 70s is too recent. That's not oldies. But, it's a song of a white lady appreciating jazz and just singing about the jazz man.
Like Lisa.
Who's so great, just like Lisa, yes.
And in this scene, Bleeding Gums Murphy gives Lisa his sax, which feels like it should be more meaningful. And I feel like the episode Lisa's sax a few years later would kind of make this not seem as important.
Well, she never uses this sax again outside this episode. She uses the sax she got from her father or the replacement he got again.
No, it's established that's the saxophone Homer bought, not Bleeding Gums Murphy's.
Yeah, but so, here is the final line by Bleeding Gums Murphy, well, before he dies.
Baby, you are gonna knock him dead. Here, take this for luck.
Your sax! Thank you so much!
Dear, I had in my notes that the second song sung by a Simpsons cast member by Carole King after You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman sung to Jub Jub.
But man, that cough. I hate that cough so much. The Simpsons, five to ten episodes ago in Maggie Makes Three, they make fun of the theatrical cough that foreshadows the death. Sure we will, Mr. Homer. Sure we will. But then they do it just for real
sincerely.
There. They just do it sincerely. And I'm like, Simpsons should be better than that.
They
even kill off Bleeding Gums but not have to telegraph it so heavily.
I mean, it's not that important, but we don't really even know why he's there.
No explanation.
If he has diseaseitis or something, I don't know.
Yeah, he's out of time.
He's a 50-year-old black man in the 90s. He's not long for this world.
Well, he didn't take care of himself, as we know. He didn't brush his teeth. That's probably true. Lots of ways he didn't take
care
of
himself. And teeth are close to your brain, so take care of those guys.
You're fine. Something almost felt like a Futurama joke in there, though. The detox center to retox center. I feel like you'd see that exact sign gag in a Futurama.
We get a brief preview of Sober Barney, which will become a character in a few years.
Once Dan Castellaneta has his way. But then we get another, like you said, the greatest hits of Gene and Reese, a recital at school.
Right.
They did so many music recitals.
Just this like is, Lisa's Pony.
This is like classic Skinner introducing a thing on a stage.
Now I have learned that most of the orchestra is having their appendixes removed. So without further ado, I give you the remnants of the Springfield Elementary School Orchestra. On saxophone, Lisa Simpson. On triangle, Martin Prince. And with a flute up his nose, Ralph Wiggum.
That's some nice fluting, boy.
They will be playing Stars and Stripes Forever. Hopefully not forever.
That's one of the quotes I use all the time. That's a nice variable, boys.
Yeah.
Do it all the time. Didn't even notice from this episode.
When Wiggum is supportive.
Yeah.
Get off the stage, Ralphie Dinny.
Get off the stage, sweetie. it's cute that, if Wiggum was a mean dad to Ralph, it wouldn't be as funny. So instead that he's constantly being nice to him, even in the classic like Ralph super episode of like, why are you so interested in my closet of mystery? But he's super friendly to him the entire time. All the special schools want Ralph. So then Lisa like has a huge jazz riff, which I think is supposed to be seen as the moment that Murphy dies and possesses her and gives her.
Oh, really? I could read it that way. That's
her
cool.
Her burst of inspiration. Then she comes back to see he's dead. I think that's when he dies and gives his power to her. That's how I always read it as. So then we come back to the very obvious reveal that Murphy is dead. And it's just played too straight.
I didn't expect it.
I expected it. I'd seen too many very special
episodes.
I was
pretty devastated because it's sort of the only real death in The Simpsons at
it
this point.
It is the first... I mean, they had introduced the character B for like 10 minutes and then she dies. But it's not the same. This is a character
cachet. You have to see and feel it through Lisa. I don't know when you experience the first death of someone you knew, but it definitely wasn't when I was 8.
It
should be noted that Mike Reese really wanted to kill Homer's mom. in this episode, and not Bleedingham's Murphy, but
or Marge's mom.
Marge's mom. Marge's yeah, mom. Marge's mom. Mm-hmm.
Which probably
been fine.
Yeah, she has been used so sparingly that you wouldn't miss her. Like, but yeah, then we get everybody trying to comfort her. I do like how bad Homer is at comforting her.
Lisa, honey, are you going to be okay?
Bleeding Gums was my hero, and I never got to tell him how I felt.
Oh, I'm sure he knew, and I'm sure that wherever he is now, he's happy.
But he was the only person who had the same love for music that I do. Thank you. Oh, Dad, why did he have to die?
Well, it's like the time that your cat Snowball got run over.
Uh-huh.
Remember, honey?
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, all we have to do is go down to the pound and get a new jazz man.
Oh, Dad!
Oh, I blew it again. What?
That's some great acting by Yardley. Even if the story doesn't make me buy into the emotion, she does a great job. And Homer, too. I like when he's trying to be sweetly reassuring, but also very stupid.
I thought that was too stupid for Homer.
Too stupid?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I love that he's like, remember that other time you were very sad?
Yeah, that's
when
a
your
bad,
cat died?
That's a bad parenting.
That's like something Bart would say to Lisa, not Homer. He's not that dumb.
Well, him sucking on the pacifier, that felt
redeemed
like a very,
everything.
Well, that felt like a very Simpsons shorts joke to me. So many of the shorts ended with somebody else sucking the pacifier.
That's true.
Gross.
Baby's mouths are so clean.
And yeah, then Bart tells, it also felt like a little bit of time killing to be like, well, what does Bart think of the afterlife is? Like, eh, whatever. But him saying nobody ever suspects the butterfly is cute and all, but
I love the butterfly holding aloft the giant gas can.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Man, this is a weird personal story.
Sure. You burned down a school, Chris.
No.
What's the statute of limitations on this?
I met a girl and slept with her very fast, and I had told her I'm a Simpsons fan, and she says, oh, you're a Simpsons fan, and she immediately shows me a tattoo in a weird spot, and it was, no one expects the butterfly. I'm like, I don't get it. And she's like, I was challenged.
Oh, you ruined it.
You're not a true Simpsons fan. You're not a true Simpsons fan. But I got
what,
in there.
Was it like, of the butterfly or was it,
it was
the
just
text?
It was just the fucking text.
Was it,
no one expects the butterfly.
Was it above her butt crack? Okay.
Yeah.
I see. Not the most elegant place for that.
Send us your Simpsons tattoos on your butt crack.
Grandpa Explains Death Wish. Is this line of the show? Do we want to give it that?
Yes.
We got the most mileage out of it.
Yes.
That's the joke.
Maybe I need to talk to somebody with a little more age and wisdom.
Death stalks you at every turn.
Grandpa?
Well, it does. There it is. Death.
It's only Maggie.
Oh, yeah. You know, at my age, the mind starts playing tricks. So, death.
That's only the cat.
Oh. Death.
That's Maggie again, Grandpa.
Oh, where were we? Death!
I like we get one more death in the background.
We get the one death in the background feeder. From the Starland vocal band gag. But him being obsessed with death, it gives Grandpa something to do. But he should know he'll never die because he's Grandpa. Mm-hmm. It would be too far for them to kill Grandpa. Like,
he's too beloved.
Wouldn't do that. And in case you don't know who Starland vocal band is,
is
Homer's tattoo.
They suck.
Here's their one hit.
Thinking of he's working up an appetite, looking forward to a little afternoon delight. Rubbing sticks and stones together make the sparks ignite, and the thought of loving you is getting so exciting.
Sky rockets in flight.
Whoa.
Afternoon delight.
Such a
very leisurely video.
It was Arrested Development that had to point out that the song is way dirtier than you think it is. And that video had like literal metaphoric ejaculations.
That's true. That's what those skyrockets and flight
the
are.
People look too wholesome to be singing about like afternoon nookie, though.
Mm-hmm. And it's just,
that's what I call it.
I only think it's weird. It might have been one other place, but this and PCU both took jabs at Starland Vocal Band, a band I have never heard of in my life. So I grew up thinking this is the worst band ever, too. And it's
not even that bad.
Could be true.
You're half right.
It could be true.
They more famously got a variety show in the 70s, and which is only remembered because David Letterman did bits on it.
Oh, right.
It was one of the first things he did. So you can look up a very young, though still grumpy, David Letterman. Like, you can watch David Letterman do his man on the street thing at a Ren Fair. And talking to guys like, you're supposed to be a Renaissance man, but you're a carny.
It's no Pink Lady and Jeff, the ultimate 70s variety show.
Then we go to the funeral, which this is where I always call this episode the Blood and Guts Murphy episode.
Yeah.
Because it's just so catchy this way of calling it.
Sousaphone.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to bid farewell to Blood and Guts Murphy.
No, it was Bleeding Gums Murphy.
Ugh. Anyway, Bloody Gums Murphy was quite the sousaphone player.
Saxophone! He was a jazz musician! You didn't know him! Nobody knew him! But he was a great man! And I won't rest until all of Springfield knows the name Bleeding Gums Murphy!
And I won't rest until I've gotten a hot dog!
Homer, this is a cemetery!
Hot dogs! Get your hot dogs here! Woohoo!
What do you do? Follow my husband around?
Lady, he's putting my kids through college.
Yeah, Lisa's crusade for Bleeding Gums is so odd because, Lisa, you've not mentioned him in 5 years. He's not that important to you.
I could see his death spurring her to care more.
Yeah,
but if
he had come up more in the past, I could buy this. It just feels like he appears only to die. And they're trying to milk some pathos out of it.
I forgot one other time. In Bart's Dog Gets an F, she did sew him into the family quilt.
Yeah, okay,
he was important,
okay.
Man.
But for the past, let's say, 3 years,
he's not mad at her.
She's been busy.
Oh, no, yeah. And then, meanwhile...
Put my kids through college is my second favorite line.
Putting my kids through college. That delivery
sounds
makes
sounds like
it
John
great.
Lovitz. But, I mean, it's not him, but it's a John Lovitz kind of voice.
Yeah. And then... This is something, too. This episode kind of wastes this B-plot on, like, I would love to see a whole episode that's about Bart suing Krusty and the lawsuit and courtroom scenes.
Yes, I mean,
instead, it all happens off camera.
We get Lionel Hutz, but we're denied a Lionel Hutz courtroom scene.
Yes.
And this joke with the OJ lawyers feels like they said no. The producer said, no, you can't do this joke. And they're like, we're doing it. We're doing it whatever way we can.
They still come off as the most distinctive-looking Simpsons characters ever made.
They didn't put in Johnny Cochran, but it's the rest of the OJ Dream
Team. That doesn't make sense.
Good news, Bart. The Krusty O Cereal Corp has settled your case for $100,000, less, of course, my legal fees.
What kind of legal fees?
Well, for a case this complex, I had to assemble a crack team of lawyers. Ronald Chaporro, trial attorney. Albert Dershman, who can hold 3 billiard balls in his mouth.
How much of the $100,000 do I get? $500?
Yes, well,
cool.
Glad you're happy. Let's roll.
Love that they take off in a pickup truck with Dershmerch in the back.
It's supposed to be like the Bronco.
Yeah.
That's why it's
no.
Yes, it is that kind of a joke.
Yeah.
This is awful. This is officially awful now.
The one saving grace I like is yet another Bart fantasy in which something bad happens to him and he walks away from that saying, cool.
He loses $500 on one roulette spin.
And he thinks it's cool. Yeah, but so Robert Shapiro and Alan Dershowitz are the people in Bart's living room for about 5 seconds. I do like the joke with the pool balls in his mouth.
Yeah.
That's kind of funny, but ultimately it just like references.
But why not Cochran or Kardashian? Why these two? What the fuck?
They can only fit in two, I guess.
Yeah.
Like these were the two least controversial. Like Johnny Cochran was easily the most controversial because he dared to hate cops and be a proud black guy who fucked over cops.
I mean, ultimately it does make sense as to why there was only $500 left with this legal team.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Though it also flash forward, the next episode, Lionel Hutz will be hanging out in Junkie Town burning things in a dumpster. So he flew through that money really fast.
I think it all went up his nose.
Yes. So then we get Homer kind of knocking jazz saying D's and do's. I do like you just replace the D's with do's. Doh!
It's
cute little wordplay. But there's so many jokes in this one that like that aren't like laughers that they just go, you go like, yeah, it's cute.
Yeah, that's clever.
It's cute. Oh, that's clever. Jazz stations in America, though, aren't very popular. And I think the internet really helped him out a lot. But this is my second favorite line.
I do like this.
Hi, I have a request. I would like you to do a tribute to Bleeding Gums Murphy, please.
No, I'd love to, little sister, but we don't have his album.
What if I could find it?
Well, I'd spin for you, but you know, ain't no one gonna hear it. Our broadcast range is only 23 feet, which makes us the most powerful jazz station in the entire U.S. of A.
Gee, your station has a lot of problems.
Tell me about it. Just look at our morning guy.
Hello, this is Mole Man in the Morning.
Good mole man to you. Today, part four of our series of the agonizing pain in which I live every day.
I just love that his saying is good mole man to you.
He's really leaning into his brand.
good mole man to you. Then it turns out the comic book guy has the Sax on the Beach album, which that is very fitting. That is just the type of guy who would own a rare jazz album, who would then double the price when he finds out it's more in demand.
I'm glad it was him. I'm only mildly disappointed. It could have been a perfect springboard for a record store guy.
Yeah.
Simpsons, but I would guess
they could have created a new record store guy.
I'm just looking at the writers right now. They don't seem like music. Be audiophiles.
Not really.
Yeah.
But Al Jean and Mike Reese, again, it's their greatest hits. They got to work Burns in.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So Lisa needs $500 and briefly Burns is like stringing her along with the money on a string.
That's pretty cute.
Yeah. But they had to work him in. You know they had to.
The second Lisa said $500, I was like, well, okay, Bart's buying the album.
Yeah.
Like, this is just also, the lines just go together so easily and they don't subvert any of it. And I did feel as a kid in 1995, I liked them being kind of current with a Pog joke.
Really good.
Lisa, look what I've got. Ta-da!
Bart, I can't believe it.
But why?
When I said my stomach hurt, you were the only one who believed me.
Oh, thank you. But $500? You'll never see that much money again.
Oh, yeah? Take a look at this.
Flesh-eating bacteria, just to make the E. coli joke more obvious.
Now get it. I do like the Pog joke, although that's an awful Pog. Like, how do you play with that giant Frisbee Pog?
Yeah.
But again, invented by Steve Allen.
That's a Steve Allen manhole.
Yeah.
Yes. By the way, the Simpsons had their own Pogs that are quite rare now.
Yes.
Skycaps.
I'm sure they're worth pennies.
Yeah.
Upon pennies.
Skybox in 1994, as they were making the Simpsons trading cards, they also made the Skycaps, a.k.a. Pogs.
I bought a ton of those at an outlet mall where they also sold Sony TVs.
I knocked this episode, but I will say I do like A and B plots coming together as opposed to the B plot being completely separate. This is the B plot solving the A plot.
Yeah, you figured once Bart got Lisa to the hospital, this story had run its course. And I totally forgot it existed.
Yeah.
The Hutt showed up.
Again, though, an episode where Bart sees Krusty would have just been a good episode anyway. Yeah. Like, I wish they hadn't burned that. Again, this is so maudlin, though, that, like, basically magic makes the entire town hear Bleeding Gums Murphy's music.
I did the best I could, Bleeding Gums.
Attention all units. Attention all units. Poison gas cloud heading for...
Oh, that's nice. Hey, it's getting cloudy. Oh, boy.
So he's dead.
Yeah. So yeah, that was Bleeding Gum sending a lightning bolt down from heaven to expand the reception of that radio station.
Showed that kind of care and attention to his career while he was alive.
Well, and then Bleeding Gum's Murphy appears in the clouds to say goodbye, and we get a very...
Who caught this?
Deep...
There's no way we caught this
kid. I got it as a kid.
In 95? I don't believe
real.
You.
For real, I did because...
I don't believe you.
I was enough of a new weeb at the time to know that people were saying that The Lion King ripped off a manga. I hadn't read Kimba,
that controversy is like a year old. I wouldn't find out about this for another decade.
Actually, I think I was reading Entertainment Weekly in 94 and 95, and that's when there was some hubbub about the possible theft.
They were probably talking about it at the time.
Well, it's not that Gene and Reese were like manga fans or anything.
Well,
it's that they wanted to take a knock at Disney by saying they stole from The Lion King ripped off it.
They are kids of the 60s and they did see the anime when
that's
they were
true.
Kids.
It
and they, I think
America.
They mentioned that on the commentary. They're like, the Lion King reminded us of a show we saw as kids called Kimba, and that's why we put this joke in the show.
We should let them hear the clip so they know what it is.
Oh, yeah.
That was for you, Bleeding Gums.
You've made an old jazz man happy, Lisa.
You must avenge my death, Kimba. I mean, Simba. Luke, I am your father. This is CNN.
Will you guys pipe down? I'm saying goodbye to Lisa.
We're sorry.
I don't want you to go.
Sorry, but I have to. Goodbye. Oh, what the heck? Once more from the top.
Yay! Oh, man. That is almost all Disney-owned properties at this point.
God, I really wish they had gotten James Earl Jones to do those voices and not Harry Shearer. I mean, he has a good job, but I mean, James Earl Jones has been on the show twice before.
Exactly, and Harry Shearer's had to fill in for him in the past, I think.
Maybe James Earl Jones has a thing that he doesn't want to play his other characters.
That could be it. We should play the CNN bumper. These were bumpers that were on the air.
They're on now. They're still there.
He's still this is CNN guy? Totally. Wow, okay.
This is CNN.
There you go.
That was an old sting I had not heard in a while. Jesus Christ, that made me know that little kid Chris sick.
I know that music.
Yeah, but no, he still says this is CNN. Okay. James Earl Jones is still the voice of Vader.
Yeah.
He's shockingly still alive.
I know. It's
played an old guy 25 years ago.
I'm of two minds of the Vader thing. Of just like, as long as James Earl Jones is alive, I do want him to be Vader. But when I heard him in Rogue One, I'm like, you sound so old, Darth Vader.
And that's when he was kicking the most ass ever on screen.
Yeah, I know. He just sounded so old. And I wonder how he's going to sound as Mufasa in the new Lion King
Lion King
He's the one they're bringing back. He's still playing Mufasa, but everybody else has been recast.
So nothing changes for James Earl Jones. Yeah. His life is exactly the same.
If I had to pick one person from the Lion King they bring back to reprise their role in it, I would pick him.
Matthew Broderick. Who no one remembers in the movie.
Maybe Nathan Lane would be my second choice after him.
I really like Billy Eichner.
Ernie Sabella.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, Billy Eichner as Timon is great.
Oh, growth, Pumbaa. I cannot wait.
Come on.
Come on. Timon's going to scream at the top of his lungs.
So a bit of a treacly ending where they then reprise Jazzman, which will be our outro music.
I gotta say, I was not this down on this episode last night, but after revisiting it here, a lot of these are not great Simpsons jokes.
No.
Especially compared to where we are in Simpsons history.
Yeah, it's watchable, but it's far under the season 6 bar that's been set.
Compared to, like, say, Homie the Clown, where we're laughing every or Bart's Comet, or even the episode right before this, the PTA Disbands, which is such a great
And I have written very few things, but I imagine the Kimba joke, that's what we were talking about, Lion King ripping off an old, what is it called?
Kimba
the White Lion. Like,
by Osamu Tezuka,
If I turn that into my boss, I would have to take that joke out. It's too distracting.
Yeah.
And there's no reason to make a joke on a joke on a joke.
Yeah, it's a bit too... It's a little sweaty.
I don't think I picked up on it for 10 years, actually. I never would have understood what it meant, or I just missed it entirely.
It is very much a critic joke, though, to make a specific... That specific movie joke of that era, of that year, even.
Yeah. I think this episode's a little too treacly.
Yeah, yeah.
A little too... And not funny enough to make up for it. And making... And just going with the obvious thing instead of an undercutting of it, which I would expect more from The Simpsons. So
yeah, and I think the later clip show, next year's clip show, even kind of makes fun of this episode by saying nobody cares about Bleeding Gums Murphy in the first place. Like, it's, he wasn't important.
They were never popular.
Yeah. Was that next year?
Yeah, it's next year. 138 is next year, which is so good. They tried. I'm glad they could at least be honest on the commentary of, like, we wanted to win an award. It didn't work.
Was sheer Emmy bait. Yes. But you know what? It's a lower point in season 6, not quite as low as the first clip show of the season. So,
but on the plus side for Fox, it got them another episode from a different production team to then add to the syndication package and earn more money.
And that's why Critics season 2 is only 10 episodes, one of which is a clip show.
Yep.
Listen to Talking Critic.
Clip show.
Yeah. So, thank you so much for listening, folks. This has been Talking Simpsons. I've been your host, Bob Mackey, and my other podcast is Retronauts every Monday with an occasional bonus episode on Friday. Go to retronauts.com or look for Retronauts in your podcatcher and you'll find it. I recommend you look up one of our Simpsons-based episodes if you want to get into the show. We've covered Bart versus the Space Mutants, the Simpsons arcade game, and Bart's Nightmare, which is also bad. But the Simpsons arcade game is great!
That's great.
And I'm on Twitter as Bob Servo.
I'm HENERYG on Twitter, and you can follow me there for updates on this show. Also, you can follow this on patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, where you can hear every episode a week early and ad free, not to mention a ton of exclusives, including, if you like this critic talk, you can hear every episode of Talking Critic on there. Plus, we have some really good interviews coming up or have been posted, but just keep an eye on them at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. And we've got that live show coming up January 28th.
It's
2018. It's free.
Just make it to the city, and we'll touch you in some way.
I need to learn to lose 30 pounds. Oh, God.
You got a sharp enough knife, Chris? We'll make it happen.
Oh, God. I heard there's somebody from a podcast company going to be there looking to sign people. Ooh. I'm just kidding.
It's my ticket to SNL, baby.
This is my ticket out of this dump. But, yes, Laser Time. You guys were both on last year's semi-sequel to Filthiest Christmas Songs.
Yes, you managed to find a whole new slew of them.
Hopefully this is going up on Christmas. It is, isn't it?
In
December? For patrons, at least.
Yes.
But there's that. Laser Time, you guys are on. Next year, we're going to hit some cartoon shit really hard. Mm-hmm. So if you want to dig deep into like serious cartoon lore, we're going to talk to historians. We're going to do some great video features. You can find all that at lasertimepodcast.com. Laser Time is the show that started that dumbass network that's topic-based. I did just watch The Simpsons Holidays of Future Past, the would-be finale from 5 years ago. It's really, really good. And
yeah.
if you don't like modern episodes, watch that one and just think of it like an alternate history. And it's a great bookend. And we did that about Christmas special sequels. Every famous Christmas special has had a number two, and they're all terrible, and we've forgotten almost everyone.
They all want another Buy That Apple.
Exactly. And 30-20-10 is also a show. If you like the stupid news segment I do at the top, we look 30, 20, and 10 years ago to the releases of that week. I think we're in Simpsons season 9 at this point, so that there's 8 or 9. And that's really fun to do, to see where you were, what we were watching, what was happening in the news 30, 20, and 10 years ago. And Video Game Apocalypse, the weekly video game show that you all have been on, including, I believe, the best of the year discussion, because you're both avid gamers.
I am.
Like the game
Danganronpa V3. Sorry, Danganronpa V3 got robbed by everybody, including VGA, and I will boycott every website and podcast.
I haven't voted yet, but I'm available for bribery.
I will bribe
you,
Chris.
Not enough people played it, Bob.
That's their problem.
If a game falls in the woods and nobody played it, will it be game of the year?
You're making me sad now.
That's what they should call the Vita Store.
Well, thanks so much for listening, folks. We'll see you next week with the Springfield Connection. See you then.
Come on, Lisa. I got a date with Billie Holiday.